You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, making the world a better place, one show at a time. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, making this world a better place one show at a time. At least we're trying.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, thanks, folks, for joining me on this Monday, the start of the week, the start of the 4-day show week for the George Wilder Jr. Show. If you notice, we've been off the air for since Friday, we've been off the air. We've been having quite a few technical difficulties on the show, so if you've been listening to or downloading the last episode of the show, you will find that there are some discrepancies, some technical difficulties that I do apologize for that, but as I've been telling guests, it probably was due to the massive heat. It may have been due to the heat because we have had a heat wave in this city. We've had a heat wave around the United States. It's been hot, folks, and it's not about to give up, but from some avenue, I'm hearing that humidity will not be as high. You know, so it's been beautiful, but it's been hot. I mean, it looks great. It looks wonderful. It looks summery. It feels good, but it's hot. And some people already have perished in this weather, especially kids in hot cars. And that is something. Why do you leave a kid in a hot car? You know, I don't understand it. Even if you're getting out for a minute or so and jumping out of your car, running into the store, running out, take the kid out or the pet out. Burning, scalding, hot car with the sun burning down. It's not right. It's not right. And we just have to keep people conscious of that because a lot of people do lapse or forget that. I mean, they will, you know, get out of the car in a minute and leave the child in the back seat and go do whatever they have to do. But it's not right. You wind up with a dead child or a dead pet, and you wind up facing charges for that. So during this heat wave, and it is a heat wave, folks, keep yourself safe. That's what this show is all about. This show is all about making the world a better place, one show at a time. And welcome once again to the George Wilder Jr. Show. And I'm looking at my screen here, and it says author Carl David, on the George Wilder Jr. Show. We'll see where that goes. All right. But anyways, you are listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, the talk of our times, making the world a better place, one show at a time. You know, 347-857-1762, or just sit back and relax and just let me do all the work. And the latest thing going, folks, is the Democratic Convention, the DNC. It's starting today, Monday, July 26th. You know, so it's starting today. I mean, all the news, re- all the news stations and national news are reporting on this convention. You know, I have yet to see the convention. I'm on the radio. I probably will be reporting a lot of it tomorrow. But I can always give my take right now on this convention. And it's been all about Bernie Sanders supporters actually dissing Hillary Clinton, because they still don't trust her. They still do not believe in her because of this email scandal. And God forbid Debbie Wasserman showed she's resigning after the this is what I'm hearing. She's resigning after this week of the convention. But yet I'm hearing that she's already a part of Hillary Clinton's campaign. Well, that tells me that Hillary Clinton and Debbie Wasserman Schultz were in cahoots all together. You know, they all together. And this is what I say. She's still trustworthy. I don't think she is still believable. I don't think, you know. And however, Trump, who wants Trump to be president? No one. I wanted so badly for Hillary Clinton to come out of this clean and to forgive her for all her past lies and just attacking Bernie Sanders unfairly. And I do blame Bernie Sanders a bit, because I feel that Bernie Sanders, during the campaigning against Hillary Clinton, I don't think he came out with both barrels against Clinton. Bernie Sanders knew so much on Clinton that he just did not say during the campaign. Even he admitted it, that he could have came out with all kind of scandalous things on Clinton, but he didn't, because he respected her as Secretary of State, Madam Secretary, okay? And I think if Bernie Sanders would have came out from the beginning hitting Clinton hard, he would be our nominee. He would be where Clinton is tonight for this convention. And with this email controversy and with the resignation of Debbie Wasserman Schultz, you're throwing the convention into chaos. I mean, there's going to be a lot of boos on stage tonight. And Bernie Sanders it seems Bernie Sanders cannot control his supporters. You know, he wants them to come together and unify behind Hillary Clinton. But a lot of them are saying no, because they feel that Hillary Clinton and Debbie Wasserman Schultz work against Bernie to bury Bernie. This is the reason why Bernie is not, you know, Hillary Clinton. They may have a point there. I think a lot of this is going to come out in the near future, that Hillary is a part of this. She's a part of this. Okay, this convention is going on now as I speak. I'm watching it on a monitor here, but I can't really hear what's going on because I have on earphones. But anyway, what's going to happen? We're going to see what's going to go on. Mainly, we're going to be paying attention to Bernie Sanders supporters. Are they going to be booing Sanders tonight when he starts to speak? A lot of commentators are saying that this could happen. You know, Bernie Sanders cannot control his supporters. Bernie Sanders should not be so forgiving of Hillary Clinton, because she may be a part of this email scandal of trying to take him and his campaign down, the reason why he is not the presidential nominee. So we're going to that's going to be interesting. And a lot of the people are asking, is Vladimir Putin, the Russian leader, the Russian president, is he meddling in U.S. elections? Now, they're all denying it. They're denying it. There's some people are saying he's it's been the United States have proven that it was Russian who hacked U.S. servers to get to put all of these emails out there. But the Russian people are denying it. And they're saying that they're trying to meddle. Russians are trying to meddle in U.S. elections in order to help Donald Trump get elected. Of course, they're denying it. They're denying it. So this is a mess, folks. I mean, this is a mess. Just seeing where it goes. You thought about Donald Trump's convention being a mess, where his wife was the first one to speak and finding out she had plagiarized a speech given by Michelle Obama in 2008. It's just a mess. And now the Democrats are going into their convention with an email scandal, with a resignation of Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the head of the DNC, the Democrats National Convention. It's just a mess. And now we got people on the floor of the Democratic Convention right now protesting, mainly Bernie Sanders supporters protesting on the floor of the convention. They're ready to boo. That's my instinct. That's my take on it. They are ready to boo, folks. You know, and it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. My guest is author Carl David, and it's Anything Goes on the George Wilder Jr. Show, and we're all about making the world a better place. But, you know, I got to cover this stuff. I got to talk about it, even though it's waning. It's a little bit it's not all there. I got to, you know, things are being put in front of my face, and I'm just randomly talking about them. But this is a mess, folks. Donald Trump could wind up being president. You know, because a lot of Donald Trump supporters say that they are not going to vote for either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. And a lot of people are saying they're going to write Bernie Sanders in, going to write his name in at the ballot box. Some people just cannot hold their nose to vote for Hillary Clinton. And that's what this – we're going to find out what this convention is all about, because if the speakers are any good at this convention, they have a lot of convincing to do. They have a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters to convince to follow, to give their support to Hillary Clinton. That's going to be a heavy lift for them, and they have to do it tonight. My understanding that Debbie Wasserman Schultz will not speak. And sometimes I hear that she will not speak, and other times I'm hearing that she will speak. So we'll just have to wait and find out. I'm pretty sure a lot of eyes are on the Democratic Convention tonight, and I think everybody should be watching it, because they have to convince us. That includes me, okay? They have to convince us if we should give our vote to Hillary Clinton, who has proven to be untrustworthy and a liar, in my estimation. However, people are saying, well, we know that. We know she's not perfect, but vote for her anyway. But vote for her. But vote for her anyway, because she's better than Donald Trump. I agree. But I just cannot vote for someone I can't trust. I cannot give my support to someone who I know has been, you know, corrupt in some way. I'm going to be watching the convention as much as I can. I'm not going to say I'm going to sit all the way through it, because there's other things I have to do, you know, but I will be getting bits and pieces of it and planned parts of it on the show probably all through the week. If anything is there that is interesting. Okay, that is interesting. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It's glad to be back on the air after 3 days off. What have I been doing? I've been doing some writing, some more writing. I got a few more short stories that I want to get. I've been relaxing, exercising, you know, trying to keep myself fit and healthy and looking great for my age anyway. And it's been great. It's been fun. I had a great time. I'm glad to be back. I'm glad to be welcomed back. And like I said before, I think last week, it was so hot last week, we were having complications on the show. And I was espousing that while we were on the air. One time I had to call in on my phone. So there's a difference there when I'm on the phone and on the mic. So you might hear a difference. Sounds like I'm in a room or something. But it was all fun. I'm learning every inch of the way, every way that I can. I am learning. I'm trying to get better. After 2 or 3 years, I'm trying to get better. I'm still learning. So hang in there with me. My guest is author Carl David on the show today. hopefully, if there's no power outages where he is or where any of, like I said before, you have to take this type of weather seriously. It is dangerous, folks. So take it seriously. You know, I mean, you can't, I mean, even walking in this type of weather, you can get heat stroke. You know, even doing too much strenuous activity out here, you can get a heat stroke, and you don't want to do that, and you can die from a heat stroke, because I'm just hearing that there's been a death from a heat stroke. A three-year-old child died of heat stroke because the mother or father or both left this person, this baby, in a hot car. And I've been railing about, please do not leave your children, your babies, your infants in a hot car. But you know what, people, you say that, but people constantly do it. They forget and they do it. They think they can do it. And next thing you know, charges are being filed. They're being locked up, you know. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We want you to stay positive, never give up, trying to be the best. Let no one turn you backwards. They will try. I bet you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. And we will be right back, folks. Stay with me. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live out of Chicago. And we are helping to make the world a better place, one show at a time. Thank you for listening. Thank you for finding the show, downloading the show, and just having a great time. Here we go.
My son has been arrested for walking while black. So I get it.
A lot of sons have been
arrested. Yeah, I get it. I mean, it doesn't make me, you know, you can't buy your way out of this one. You can't educate your way out of it.
It's happening too much, or at least we know about it now.
It's always happened. We see more evidence of it. And too often people still are inclined to say, well, if he'd had a different attitude, well, if he hadn't been driving, well, if he hadn't been this, if he hadn't been that, almost as if the victim is partially to blame, you know, in the case of Garner. Well, he shouldn't have resisted. In the case of Brown, well, where was he? In the case of Trayvon, well, he had a hood on, you know, and in the case of whoever, you know, in case of Sandra Bland, you know, well, her attitude was better. It's like, no, stop. Stop. This has nothing to do with the victims. This has everything to do with the culture of demeaning a person of color. And there is no justification for a society where my son has a far greater chance of being stopped, held, killed than your son. simply because he's black.
I totally agree with that. I think that's one of the greatest pieces. That's a clip. That's Brian Gumbel talking to one. I can't think of his name. He is a television host. Comes on at midnight, I believe. But anyway, that is a, he's walking while black, driving while black. It's just relentless. Michael Jordan just said something. He said he made a statement on police brutality. He made a statement on the shootings of police, and he's donating to both the NAACP and the Policeman's Fund to better these things. $1 million apiece. Wow. Good for Michael Jordan. Wow. That is great. That is great. But we have to do something about the violence in this country, people. We just have to do something about it. That's why I'm calling this show a place where, at least one of the places where we can try and make the world a better place, you know, because this is a mess out here. And we hope that tonight's convention, Democratic convention, if it's not too disrupted by Bernie Sanders supporters or just disruptors in general, we hope that they talk about the violence, ending the violence, you know, talk about it, you know, put it out there. I mean, because we are Americans. We should stop fighting each other. This is not a civil war, but it's making itself out to be because we're doing nothing but killing each other. And the other countries are watching us. They are watching us. Other countries are watching us. They are taking notes. And they are telling their citizens not to come to the U.S. because of the crime. Yeah, that is totally true. That's embarrassing. I mean, the United States is one of the greatest countries on earth, regardless of what Trump say. I don't know how he can make it great. It's already great. You know, he can try to make it better, you know, but making it great, it's already a great country. But a lot of his supporters are buying that, you know. you recall Trump saying, I love the educated. I love the poorly educated. I love the idiots. You know, that's basically what his who his supporters are. That's why they flock into him. Hey, I can't read. I can't write. I support Trump. You know, so, you know. But let's hope that the Democratic convention tonight and each and every night until it ends, put a spotlight on violence, okay? On violence. It has to, Obama hasn't. I mean, he's talked about it. He's felt, he's got really emotional about it, but yet he has yet to do anything about it. So let's hope they put the spotlight on violence in America. And even in some of the cities like Chicago, you know, give the police departments some help. And some of these police departments should not actually turn down any help that's coming from the federal government because they feel as if they can't. They feel that they can do it themselves, but actually they're not doing it because people are constantly being murdered, shot down, and killed and so on and so forth. So let's hope that the convention tonight bring a light to violence in America. In America. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on LinkedIn. I'm all over the place. Follow me on Google. And we are, I'm looking at a round table right now of a bunch of journalists as the backdrop is the Democratic convention. I don't know if it started yet. I'd rather be hearing some of the speakers than to be watching the moderators, though, you know, because I don't really need to watch the moderators. We want to hear the speakers. You know, they're the ones who's going to try to convince us that we should still support or Hillary Clinton. I mean, I really need to be persuaded on this, okay? Especially on this. Okay, I'm seeing Hillary and her family and all of this kind of thing. But they need to really convince me to give my vote to Hillary Clinton. Definitely, my vote is not going to Trump. If he wins, he screws up the he screws up America. I will feel really good that I wasn't the one. If Hillary screws up America with her untrustworthiness, with her corruption, her lies, I will feel good to know that I did not vote for her, you know. But with this convention tonight, they're going to have to convince me big time that I should vote for her. You know, they're going to have to, and I'm not going to sit and watch it. I'm just going to, you know, get bits and pieces of it from, you know, certain news outlets and all this kind of thing. Okay, let's move on. We've talked about, I guess we'll be talking about this throughout tonight. Hillary and Tim Kaine. I mean, when I first heard that she actually picked Tim Kaine, I wanted her to, so many of us wanted her to pick Elizabeth Warren. I wanted her to pick Bernie Sanders. Either one of them people would have solidified my vote and a lot of other votes. But she picked somebody we didn't know. And now they have to convince us that Tim Kaine will make a great vice president, even a president, if something happens to Hillary. So I was very disappointed that she didn't pick either Warren or Sanders for her vice president. And I said to myself, oh, my God, I can't vote for this lady. She's going to lose. She's going to lose with Tim Kaine. But now that she has this convention tonight, she has to convince all of us who are skeptical of Tim Kaine. A lot of people have listened to Tim Kaine and they found themselves actually liking him, saying he's a great guy, saying he's a winner and all this kind of thing. Well, that's all in good, but she's going to have to convince me and a lot of other supporters of Bernie Sanders, Tim Kaine is the right person for this job. Obviously, Debbie Wasserman Schultz wasn't right for the job of DNC because she's on her way out. She should have been out months ago. People were calling for her head months ago. Now that it's an email scandal, she's gone. She's got to go. She's just in some cases, Debbie Wasserman Schultz is a dislikable person. She doesn't seem real when she's at the podium speaking. That's not Debbie Wasserman Schultz. That's Debbie Wasserman Schultz smiling and grinning, and that's all fake. She's the Debbie Wasserman Schultz that said Sanders is a damn liar. You know, that's her. That's her really persona. You know how people put on and try to be somebody. They have an audience looking at them, facing them. You know, they're going to be all smiley face and all googly and all nice. But behind the scenes, they're mean as hell. That's Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And a lot of other people come to think of it. But that's Debbie Wasserman Schultz. They put on a facade in front of the camera. They put on a facade facing an audience. But once that audience is not there, that facade comes off, and they're the meanest damn people in the world. They're the kind of people you wouldn't want to work with, want to work for. And I think that's what Debbie Wasserman Schultz was, and she's gone. And that's a great thing. Donna Brazile has taken up the mantle since Debbie Wasserman Schultz's departure. I've been seeing Donna Brazile for a long time. I mean, I've known her for a long time. She's always on This Week with George Stephanopoulos, if I can say his name. She's a pundit, you know, but she's a Democratic pundit. But I always enjoyed her insight and her knowledge on whatever political subject she was talking about. And I think she's very, very capable. She came out and she apologized for the email scandal. basically she apologized for Debbie Wasserman Schultz. I'm pretty sure she was one of the people calling for the resignation of Debbie Wasserman Schultz even months back, even long before this, you know. So, folks, we're going to be talking about the in and out. We're going to be talking about the Democratic Convention tonight. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be really interesting to find out a lot, because they got to get my vote. They're really going to have to convince me. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me all over the place, folks. I'm here. It's a great day in Chicago. It is hot, but it's beautiful. It's beautiful. All right, let's go to the phones. All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show.
Hello?
You're on the George Wilder?
Yeah, hi. This is Carl David. I'm supposed to be a guest.
Arthur Carl David. Yeah, yeah, you right here, man. Thanks for calling me. I was just, you know, I'm in my studio and looking dead out here on the Broadway, and I'm seeing people walking back and forth and everything. And it is just so beautiful. It is so nice. It is just, I think this is one of the greatest summers I've really experienced in a long time. But I do know in some places it's very, very hot.
It was hot in Philadelphia today. It was 100 and humid.
Oh, man, 100. What are you doing there? I mean, that's deadly. That's deadly weather.
It is. You stay inside as much as you can, and if you have to go out to try and do that before 11 or after 3, you know, and you do what you have to do.
Yeah, stay hydrated, you know, not to do too many strenuous things out here in the heat, you know, sometimes. All right, Carl David on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thanks for joining us. Tell us a little bit something about you. Give us a small bio.
I am a third-generation art dealer in Philadelphia in our family-owned and operated business, which is now in its fourth generation. I'm 67 years old. What else do I do? I'm a musician, photographer, a handful of things, but my passion is reaching out to people.
Jack of all trades.
You know, having lived through the suicide of one of my brothers when I was 16, he was 22, it impacted my life quite a bit for years, and I've been using that experience with my book and doing interviews to try and raise awareness to the issue of suicide prevention and survival, and now I'm aiming at our friends in the military who have a horrible instance of suicide, one a day in active duty and about 22 a day among veterans, and that's just not acceptable. So this is my new passion, which has been brewing for years.
Oh, okay.
But I'm still an art dealer by trade. We specialize in American and European 18th, 19th, and 20th century and 21st century paintings, drawings, watercolors, and sculptures. So we try and enrich people's lives by giving them something beautiful to look at in their homes.
Oh, that's great. That's wonderful. Well, let's get back to the suicide. How do you know if someone is contemplating suicide, especially a military veteran?
Well, sometimes you don't know. You don't see it because they keep it inside. But there are other times that they send out some overt signals. They may mention that they've lost the zest for life, or they might come outright and say, you know, I'm going to kill myself. And when someone says that, you really have to take it to heart. I mean, you got to pay attention, because even if someone says that in jest, it's not funny. And there could be that 1% chance that they're serious. And you just have to – you got to keep your eyes open. You have to be vigilant and alert and kind of expect the worst and hope for the best.
Wow, that is something. That is something. Because I've known a few people who have said, well, life is just not – you know, for me, I think it's better if I die. Why was I born? Why was I here? I mean, next, you know, you're right. You got to take those things seriously. And wow, it just, how would you talk someone out of committing suicide if they really wanted to do that? There's got to be places.
That's a real challenge. I mean, you know, and there are people who do this regularly where they sit on an emergency crisis line. But if somebody doesn't call, you have no way of knowing that they're on that edge.
Exactly.
So what you need to do is, if you're in the company of someone or you hear about somebody who's, you know, really despondent, they've dropped out of their social life, they've been giving away their possessions, you know, signs, these are all signs that they're just giving up and they're going to shut down. So if you know somebody like that, or you are in the company of someone who knows somebody, you really need to reach out. And you would think that if you call 911 for someone, or you call a family member of theirs, that you're being intrusive and you're overstepping your boundaries. But the truth of the matter is, the worst you can do is humiliate them or embarrass them, but you might just save their life.
Yeah, yeah. Getting back to military, I mean, a lot of military soldiers, you know, take their own lives. Do you think this has something to do with what they've seen in the midst of combat?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, when they come back with that fog of war, and they've either seen things or had to do things that they just find reprehensible within themselves, but it was a matter of life and death and didn't really have a choice, but they still have to live with that, their conscience, you know, and the recurring nightmares and those visions of things. It takes a lot of professional help to get past that. And honestly, I don't know if they ever really get past it, but they can hopefully learn how to handle it and deal with it. So when, you know, that kind of vision comes back, that they can understand it and maybe release it and let it go and not punish themselves. But I can't even imagine, you know, having the experience of some of these horrors that these guys, men and women both, that they see and experience, and then coming back, and you know, you come back into the regular world, and it's a whole different ballgame here. I mean, people don't know, who haven't been at war, how severe it really is, and how these things have a lasting, impactful effect for years, possibly forever.
Yeah, and in some cases, suicide is inevitable.
Unfortunately, I think you're right. It becomes their only way out, you know, where they can stop the pain. I mean, there are counselors, and there are doctors, and there are medications, but there are a lot of factors that also can precipitate suicide besides the military aspect. You've got people who suffer from depression, and sometimes they're so far down they can't see up to see that, you know, through the darkness that there's hope. And that's kind of where, you know, I kind of reach out and let people know that they're not alone and that they're loved and there is help for them. Not the 1960s anymore, where there's such a stigma of shame attached to it.
You know, I
was in high school, and you know, I got to walk down the halls when I was back in school a couple of weeks later, and was like, I don't know if I still to this day don't know if I felt it or imagined it, but the eyes looking at me saying, "Hey, that's the one whose brother killed himself." You know, it's just, it's really sad, and it's a really epic thing to try and get over.
Have you confronted many military personnel who have had or have gotten suicidal tendencies?
Well, yeah, I've had contact with, and I know I'm friendly with a lot of people in all aspects of the armed forces, Army, Navy, Coast Guard, Marines, and, you know, some of these guys don't want to talk about it, but others do when they found out there's someone else who's gone through it and has survived the experience in their family. They open up a little bit. You know, they don't feel as vulnerable. They don't feel as alone. They're not the only ones feeling what they're feeling. And people have asked me, have I ever had any suicidal tendencies or thoughts of it? No, I haven't. And I haven't because I've seen the wrath of what it does to other people, family members, survivors in the family and friends. And my job is to do just the opposite, and it's to reach out. I think that's one of the reasons I'm here on this planet, you know, why I was given that experience, unkind as it was when I went through it, because it was dreadfully painful. And, you know, as I tell people, you don't get over it. You learn to live with it as best you can.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. And you are sort of supplying some of your experience with this in trying to help other people. That's great.
I am. That's exactly what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to take my darkest days and do something with them to help others. You know, and to let them know that they're not alone. They're not the only ones in the world who have this, you know, tendency or fear or thought. Just they're not alone. So unfortunately, more than 1 million people a year take their life worldwide, and that is a scary statistic.
Oh, wow.
That we have 40,000 in this country every year. It's too much.
And a lot of those people who take their lives, especially military personnel, it didn't not have to happen.
Right, right. I mean, you know, there just needs to be more help for them. more avenues where they can vent and talk to people and let this burden out, you know, from within.
Yeah. All right. Author Carl David on the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're talking about suicide among military veterans, and it is skyrocketing. What made you want to actually help people like this? You've seen too much of it, or just happening too often, or do you just feel you're compelled to, you know, you're called out as one of those people to try to lend your experience and your know-how to this problem?
I think it's a combination of all those things, but primarily it's that I've got this experience, and if I don't do something constructive with it, then I've wasted an opportunity to maybe save somebody's life. And, you know, I may never know whether I save somebody's life or not, but I keep putting it out there, knowing that it's doing somebody some good. Somebody listens to one of these radio shows or sees me on a television show or reads an interview or happens to read my book. And that's, that's really, I think, my higher purpose in life. And I am compelled to do this. And it's difficult because every time I do one of these interviews, it brings it right back to 1965 in October. You know, and the way I found out was my brother didn't. I have two older brothers, and we all lived in one house. And I was in my senior year in high school, and I went to school that morning, and my brother hadn't come home the night before, and it was a real feeling of malaise in the house and a nervousness. And I said to my parents, you know, I want to stay home. And they said, no, you go to school. You know, we'll figure out what's going on. And I figured maybe he was in a car accident or he was out with a girlfriend all night or whatever. It was really out of keeping and out of character for him not to either call or just come home. So I went to school. I drove that day. And I was in the assembly in the morning. And, excuse me, the principal gets up with the microphone and announces my name and says, would you please come to the front here? I started to shake. I didn't know what was going on, but I knew it wasn't good. And he said, there's been an emergency. You need to go home. And by the grace of God, he didn't tell me what it was. He was smart enough to just tell me to go home. And I was home in about 3 minutes, and I walked in, and my oldest brother was standing in the doorway, and he told me, you know, he said, Bruce killed himself.
Wow.
And I almost fell through the floor.
Wow, I know. Wow. That had to be devastating.
It was. And my whole world just turned black in an instant. I, you know, this was the furthest thing from my mind.
Yeah.
We were a happy family. Yeah. You know, at least we thought.
Yeah. Yeah. Carl, can we talk about your book?
Sure. Sure. This is actually my third book. Well, my second book. My first book was Collecting and Care of Fine Art, which I also wrote and published in 1981 with Crown to level the playing field so that people would have a fair shot, you know, with all the investment hype and everything going on. But this book called Bader Field, How My Family Survived Suicide, is really my heart. It took me a long time to write this book, maybe 20 years, and it took me a longer time. Yeah. The thing is, I went back and I would write it, and it would become painful, so I would stop. I put it down for 6 months, and then I would start again because I had this thing in me that I just had to do this. And it began as homage to my dad, who only lived 8 years after my brother took his life. But my father was my hero, and I knew someday I was going to have kids, and they would never know the greatness of the man and also of my brother. So I persevered, and at one point my wife said to me, you know, you're intellectualizing when you're writing these chapters about your dad and about your brother. If I don't get it and feel it, your readers aren't going to feel it. So if it's too painful, don't do it. So I said, no, I'm going to go back and redo it. And you know, I let the tears flow, and it became a real epic work.
It sounds like an epic.
I mean,
20 years, it has to be an epic.
It really was. Hope it doesn't take me that long to get a film made.
Exactly. Can you share a little bit of it with us?
Yeah, sure. It's ironic because my brother's birthday is actually tomorrow, July 26th. So I'm going to read a chapter. Chapter 35 is called Horrible Date in Infamy. And it's basically about these dates that come up, birth dates, death dates, and things like that, that bring it all back to the forefront. And this was a couple of years ago. So I started out by saying it's now 42 years after the fact, and today is a horrid reminder of the violent loss we all suffered so long ago when we lost Bruce. I always know that the time of year is approaching. As summer ends and fall replaces it with that crisp, cool air tainted with a foreboding date. October 13th, I always think I'll get through it with blind ignorance, but so much time has passed. I fail to acknowledge that no matter how much the distance is in years, the scar of that event is permanent. There's no walking away, no forgetting, only avoidance. Then the unrelenting forces of the universe remind me, no matter how much effort's expended to erase it, no matter how much I redirect the emotions towards suppression, no matter what the mode of distraction, the emotional body will win. The symptoms of gut ache, headache, nightmares, fatigue, indifference, agitation, anger, rage, inability to focus, flawed judgment, impaired decision-making, short temper, irritability, and general malaise will persist and not relinquish their grip until the deeply buried pain is allowed to surface. Some things in life are programmed with permanence, so we must work with them, not futilely against them. So as this day approached this year, I maintained a leveled calm with an occasional episode of agitation, but overall, nothing unusual. The stiff neck and headache appeared in tandem on a mild scale as I felt the grip of the past sneaking up on me. As I worked through the day at the gallery, the headache subsided with an inordinate quenching of coffee, establishing a temporary victory. And so the 11th came and went with relative ease. The 12th redoubled its strength and gifted me with a permanent, persistent headache. Coffee after coffee, no change. The pounding persisted like the stranger's unrelenting knocking on the door. I yawned to release some of the pressure over my eyes. A few drops of moisture ebbed, but no difference as the suffering continued. I called Alan in California, my eldest brother. Hey, you okay? It's the anniversary week of Bruce's death. I wasn't aware of the date, he said, but I've been feeling weird all day, you know? I never really have been quite certain whether it was the 13th or the 14th. It was sometime during the night of the 13th, but Pop found them in the morning of the 14th, so it was actually either or both. How are you doing? He asked. I'm okay. My words cracked with vibrato. My eyes wetted quickly. My body bears witness with symptoms similar to those that might have experienced as he took his last breath, headache and neck pain. Alan's tender concern hurled me back to the day he was standing at the bottom of the steps at our house on Cliveden Street in Mount Airy. He had the dreaded job of telling me that Bruce was dead as I walked through the door, panic-stricken. His words blackened my world in an instant. I left my body thrust into a vacuous place for the rest of my life, which would remain a realm of contentious objection. That blade of steel cut so deeply, I didn't care if I survived the wound. Bruce's suicide was a senseless act that defies explanation and logic. There were no answers, nor would there ever be. The mystery would remain unsolved. Shortly after my call to Arlen, my wife, the phone rang. Alan just called me to make sure I was okay, Mom explained. He told me you called to check on him, and that was very touching. He was very touched by that. This was the first time he ever called me on this day, and I felt quite moved as well, my mother said. It was a difficult day then. It still is now. I'll never forget the look of horror on your face when you and Alan were slumped in each other's arms.
Oh, wow.
At the bottom of the stairs, when he delivered that terrible message, she started to weep.
Mm-hmm.
That did it. The rest of my tears rose in a rushing tide as we relived those dreadful moments. I have 59 years now, but somewhere in the recesses of my life, I will forever be 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
The nightmare resides, but somehow we simply have to live with it, acknowledge it, and deal with feelings as they arrive and surface. The search for answers, clues, anything at all to grasp has been ongoing for 42 years, but the torment rages on with reminders as people from the past appear from time to time. It was rumored that Bruce questioned his professor about suicide in his class that fateful night at Temple University. Somehow later confessed they knew something but were sworn to secrecy and would never divulge the information, not even to us. And so there were clues here and there, but nothing more than vague references leading to further abstraction. Did it really matter? Bruce was gone. His bright blue eyes closed forever and locked in darkness.
Wow. Okay. Wow, that was moving. That was moving. That was one of the greatest excerpts I've ever heard, man.
Thanks.
Just awesome. That was just awesome, and I hope my listeners out there go out and get this book. Where can we find it?
It's online, anywhere, Amazon.
Amazon?
Amazon. It's in the Apple iBook store, Kindle, Nook, Kobo, and it's about 60 different digital markets worldwide. And it's very inexpensive to download, but you can also get a soft copy. And it's actually called Baderfield, How My Family Survived Suicide by Carl David. It's a great read. I read you a tough chapter, but most of the book is very inspirational and uplifting. And it basically shows how
it was great, Carl. It was great, man.
Thanks, George.
I'm pretty sure my listeners enjoyed it. I'm pretty sure once the show is podcasted and downloaded, people are going to be listening to it still. And it was just wonderful. It was moving, and I'm encouraging everybody out there to go out there and buy this book. You have a website?
It's down at the moment. It's carlydavid.com, but it's being rebuilt. So,
but we can always go we can always go to Amazon and Barnes and Noble and places like that.
Yeah. It's everywhere.
All right, Carl. Thanks for being on the show, man. I mean, one other
George,
thing.
George, thank you.
Would you like
I appreciate it.
Okay. Would you like a link of this show? Maybe you can.
Oh,
I'd
love one. Yeah.
Yeah, I can send it to you. Maybe you can put it on a blog or website whenever you get one.
Oh no, I will. I'm up on Facebook and I'm on LinkedIn and a lot of different social media. So I'll put it out there for you.
Okay. No, not for me, but for you. I want them to know about your book. This is about you,
thank
not
you.
Me. So
okay. No, I will definitely save the link and I'll put it on. I am connected to like thousands and thousands of people on the different social media, so I'll start it there.
Yeah.
It'll definitely be up on my website when it's finished.
And they can learn more about this suicide and the work you do for veterans. This is great.
Absolutely.
Thanks for being on the show.
George, thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Bye bye. All right, that was author Carl David on the George Wilder Jr. Show talking about veteran suicide. It was great. It was wonderful. We should be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for listening to the show. Thanks. We're still talking about the Democratic Convention here, and we will be right back. welcome back. And once again, I want to thank author Carl Davis for being on my show to talk about veteran suicide and how to prevent it. It's almost inevitable. It's going to happen. Maybe we can check out his book. Maybe if you have a member that's been in the military who is contemplating or thinking about, or you see signs of maybe pending suicide, make sure you call someone, a crisis line or something, and make sure you pick up his book. Okay, pick up his book. All righty, we're back at the Democratic Convention, but I'm not going to be really saying much about it because I'm on the radio and I can't really do that. Okay, we've had another nightclub mass shooting where two teenagers died. All right, and this was in Florida again. And as I've said previously, folks, I hope one of the things that they put front and center at this convention is violence in America. I mean, there's nothing more important than that. We want to try to stop Americans from killing Americans. That doesn't look good around the world. You know, this is not the 1800s, where there was an actual civil war between the North and the South. It doesn't matter now whether you're North, South, East, or West, we're killing each other, and it has to stop. These people have, this was not front and center in the Trump convention, but I did hear him say something about violence. Hopefully these people will say, the Democrats will say something about violence too. Obama mentions violence. That's all he does is talk about it. He doesn't do anything, you know. He talks about it. He feels very emotional when it happens, and he addresses it, calls it unnecessary and uncalled for and stupid. I agree, but he's a president. He has power. Maybe he can do something to stop it, but in my sense, he will not. He will not. He has executive powers. He can do something. He doesn't always need Congress. He doesn't always need Congress, but somehow he wants Congress. If he doesn't have Congress going along with him, he will not try and use his own powers, his executive powers that we gave him when most of us voted for him and gave him the office of President of the United States. All righty. We are glad to be back on the show, folks. I've been gone for 3 days. Usually it's always 3 days. I'm on Monday through Thursday. I'm going to expand the show Monday through Friday because I think it's picking up. It's picking up in popularity. And we want to extend it. When I first became a radio show host, I was on just for 2 days or 3 days. And then every now and then I'll expand it, you know. And I was on weekends. And I told myself, I want my weekends to myself, okay? All right, Fort Myers, two teenagers dead, Florida nightclub, mass shooting. What else is new, folks? They have to talk about violence in the city of, and not just in the city of Chicago, but around the globe. And I want to talk about it. Carl just said that in Philadelphia, they were getting, Philadelphia, isn't that where the Democratic Convention is? I'm pretty sure. All right. He just said there it was 100 degrees, you know, and unrelenting heat wave. It's beautiful here in Chicago, even though previously it was hot as hell. If it wasn't triple digits, it felt like triple digits with the humidity, if I can say it. I love that. Sometimes I get tongue-tied, folks. Oh, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. It's great to be back. We're all about making the world a better place. I'm glad that author Carl David was on the show to help try to make the world a better place in sense of trying to eliminate as much as possible veterans suicide, because it's happening. It's happening. All right, you're listening to the Talk About Times on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Let's see what we got here. All righty, clip it.
The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air.
Go around. Clap
This is the Talk About Times. The Talk About Times. Let's talk, everybody. Broadcasting from Chicago. This is the Talk About Times. The Talk About Times. Let's talk, everybody. All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. The convention is still here. The Democrats, they're getting their last week. It was the Republicans. So we'll just have to find out how it's going to go. I do know that Bernie Sanders supporters are very, very pissed off at this email scandal involving Debbie Wasserman Schultz and her protege, maybe, allegedly, hopefully not, Hillary Clinton. And there's someone on the podium now. I'm watching it, but I'm not, you know, broadcasting it. This is PBS that it's on. I'm pretty sure it's on CNN and MSNBC, a lot of these places, cable television, you know, live. And a lot of the moderators and reporters are outstanding. I mean, if you're watching it, you're watching it. You know, they're telling us all about it. Gwen Ifill, she looks good. She looks nice. And they're at the Democratic convention right now as we speak. And I think that every Democrat should be watching this, because a lot of them are either switching their vote, not going to vote, and just pissed off. So if they want unity in the Democratic Party, I am not a Democrat, folks. I am not a Republican. I'm an independent. And I am so glad to be that, because both the Democrat Party and the Republican Party, they have problems. They have problems. They have big problems. And when I say that I'm not one, I am so proud of not being one. But if I had to lean to one party, it would probably be the Democratic Party. But right now, they are about to implode, because the Bernie Sanders supporters aren't on. They are not in the Clinton camp as of right now. And I think she has a lot of work to do because of that tonight. And we just can't wait to hear what that is. All righty, we'll be right back.
You're watching The Breakfast Club.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ MV Angela Yee, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. We got a special guest in the building.
That's right.
Dr. Umar Johnson.
Peace,
my
and
brother.
Love.
Peace.
Peace and love, family.
Brother?
All is well. Glad
to
be back.
Now, let's get right to it, man. In light of everything that's going on, what are the solutions? We've discussed the problem so much. What are the solutions?
All right. Before I state the solution, I would have to challenge you on that. Because although we talk about the problems a lot of people don't understand how the problem operates.
Gotcha.
Let me give you an example. Take miseducation.
Okay.
People know the children aren't learning. They know black boys are not graduating. They know special ed is an issue. They know ADHD is a problem. But they don't know how this operates.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand how the child goes from the classroom into the special education system.
Okay.
So they have to be taught how it operates. You follow? So we understand that police genocide is a problem in the black community. We understand that structural inequality, disproportionality, i.e. racism, is a problem. But do we understand how racism operates? So I think that once you understand how the problem operates and manifests itself, you're now in a position to solve it.
Mm.
Someone comes to me for therapy. Before I do any therapy, what I do, a clinical history.
Mm.
Is there depression in your family? Have you been depressed before? Have you ever contemplated suicide? So I have to understand your background and how you've been living your life in order to solve your current everyday problems. So now, coming to the present, what we're seeing going on around the country. Let's be honest. Africans were brought to America to serve. We're no longer necessary for the American economic order to operate. They don't need us to function. That explains the purging. That explains the ethnic cleansing.
Even with all these Negroes making money?
Well, remember now, when you look at the black folks who are rich, they are a small percentage of the general body politic of the community. You understand? 85% of black folks are struggling. Half of our children grow up in poverty. Most of our single-parent black mothers are poor, even with a burgeoning rate of black women earning their college degrees. Mm. So simply put, black America is suffering despite the television projection of success. Yes, we are more educated than ever before. We have the bachelor's, we have the master's, we have the doctorates. But that education has not taken place alongside an increase in wealth acquisition. We're smarter, but we still don't own anything.
Mm. But we know we're poor. We know some of us are not well educated. We know some of us have a lot of problems due to where we're growing up in our environment.
Yes.
But besides all of that,
mm-hmm.
we got a bigger problem with racism, the way that other people look at us.
I agree.
You know what I mean? But I'm not saying it's right, but the way we look at ourselves is bad.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Because if I'm walking down the street and I see some brothers with some hoods on, it makes me think twice.
Right.
So if it makes me think twice, I know it's going to make somebody else think twice, but it doesn't give us them the right to put a.
But that's based off your experiences, though.
But it is based off my experience.
It's also based off conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
The conditioning is critical. Media is critical to the social agenda of any country. You understand? You take Adolf Hitler. Before he did what he did in Germany, he conducted a media campaign that sought to destroy the image of a European Jew in the German mind before the physical Holocaust began. Mm-hmm. Same thing in America. Before you begin taking the black life, you must kill the image of the black life.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at gangster rap, which plays a hand in it,
mm-hmm.
okay, when you look at the way in which we're portrayed in movies,
mm-hmm.
when you look at the way in which we're portrayed on radio, popular media, magazines, it is in a very negative way, as if to say these people, the world would be better off without these people.
That's why they leave people criminal records when
they
kill them.
Exactly. In other words, it's not so bad that he died because he went to jail anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to kill the image before you kill the person. Why? Because people will take up for people who are unjustly treated. But if you can convince the world that we would be better off without these people by killing their image, then when the physical carnage begins, no one will care.
How do we change that, though? How do we change the way that America looks at African Americans, and how do we change the fact that these racist individuals, racist police officers, stop pulling out the gun? See, I think it's you have to penalize them.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, you know, it's kind of like a kid. You know, your kid does something bad, and you say, okay, it's okay. He's going to continue to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you bust his ass, next time he's thinking about doing it, he's going to be like, well, you know what? My pops is going to bust my ass. I feel like the police officers that kill African Americans, just kill people in general, they don't get penalized for it.
I agree with it. You're absolutely correct. For example, behavioral psychology, two basic laws is what? All behavior is a function
mm-hmm.
of the context in which it takes place. The American racial hierarchy, it's a function of the context. And then it's a function of the consequences.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You follow?
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, behavior never stands still. Whether it's you, whether it's a child, whether it's the country, whether it's the police. Behavior is always getting worse or it's always getting better. So when Zimmerman wasn't punished for Trayvon, that automatically created a context for it to happen again. Do you understand? Walter Scott, Tamir Rice, it creates a context.
Michael
so the
Brown.
Next police officer says, well, wait a minute, I can be a little bit more trigger happy because the last five black men and women, Sandra Bland, who were murdered by police, were not held accountable. So when you do nothing about misbehavior,
mm-hmm.
then you're actually supporting its repeating itself.
Now, what do protests do? Because people protest and they say,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I love the unity, and I love the unity of African-American people. I wish we could be more unified when it's not just a brother dying. But I feel like sometimes the protest, what is it getting accomplished?
Okay.
You know? And the reason I ask that is because, you know, you protest, you shut down a highway, there's an ambulance that's trying to get somebody to a hospital, that person dies in an ambulance. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm stuck in traffic. I can't pick up my kid at 5 p.m. So what is the protest actually doing? Is it going to make the cop look at us any better? Like, what can we do besides, I think, the protest? I don't know if the protest really works.
Right. Well, first of all, we got to keep in mind that the black person is normally dead before the ambulance shows up to get them in the first place.
True.
So let's be clear on that. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing, Envy. Protest
is
the
funny,
first
fellas.
Stage of any political economic struggle.
Right.
Protest is your marketing program to let the world know what I stand for, what's happening to
mm-hmm.
me, and what I want. Protest allows you to control the public narrative about your struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Without the protest, the world doesn't know why you're doing what you're doing.
That's
so
real.
Protest is important mm-hmm. because it is your way to put out your message.
Gotcha.
So you can't do nothing without it. The problem with black people is there's nothing after the protest.
Right.
Do you understand? The protest becomes the goal instead of the means to the end.
That's what I keep asking. What is the solution? What's the next action? Like we saw.
Well, let me tell you what has to happen now.
Okay.
Because now we're in a state of crisis for black America.
Okay.
Three things black America has failed to do, which is going to keep this carnage machine in place, this police genocide. Number one, we have failed to publicly criticize and hold accountable the executive branch of the United States government, mm-hmm. i.e., President Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. Despite all the killings, despite all the murders, despite an unemployment rate and a dropout rate that is greater under a black president than it was under the two previous Republican presidents, mm-hmm. black people have remained silent. Mm-hmm. Obama has ignored black folk. In fact, we are the only so-called minority population in the country for which he has done nothing nor has spoken significantly for our issues. Compare us to LGBT. They got three laws under Obama. Three. That is unprecedented. Mm-hmm. How many laws did black people get under Obama to protect us from police genocide or even to improve the schools or to reduce incarceration?
Wow.
Zero. Okay, they got a Supreme Court justice. Latinos got a Supreme Court justice. LGBT got a Supreme Court justice. President Obama had the opportunity to appoint the first African-American female Supreme Court justice, and he chose not to act. It's not all his fault, though. We have created a context where the president can ignore black people and get away with it because we told the entire world when he was elected that all he had to do was just be black and we were fine. Remember?
Yeah, we didn't.
He doesn't have to do anything but be black. That is the worst thing you can say as a marginalized, oppressed group in such a racist country as this, as to tell the world that the president, the executive branch of the United States government, does not have to be accountable for you.
That's for any head of state, though. Any head of state,
yes,
we elect, we need to push and make sure things happen.
But Obama is the first president out of 44, the first one from George Washington up, that has not had to deal with any sort of public criticism from black people.
Mm-hmm.
And if he leaves office without any, here's the problem. If we let Obama leave office without any condemnation from the black community, by virtue, you cannot hold Hillary or Trump accountable for what they do not do for black people, because you have now created a precedent where a president can come in for 8 years, ignore you, even with police genocide, and not receive any criticism.
Why do people make excuses? You know, and I was always mad. I was upset about this because I felt like he was our president, you know, and I felt like when certain things happen, I felt like he should be on the front lines because he's dealt and seen, and I'm sure he's been pulled over before. I'm sure he's been racially profiled before. But it kind of bothers me when I see a lot of these individuals get shot and killed, and you don't really hear much from them.
Exactly.
Even to the thing with, you know, when he flew back to go to the you know, the funerals and
yes,
speak to the officers in Dallas, I thought that was great.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also thought, well, what about Baton Rouge?
Exactly.
What about
exactly
Minnesota?
Exactly.
What about Ferguson?
He's not going to do that because President Obama understands something that most blacks in America do not understand. The first business of America is racism. Let's be clear about something. Most white people in America, okay, are also suffering economically, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm white in a country based on white privilege, what is my claim to fame if I don't have a decent education, don't have a good job? For many white people in this country, their only claim to fame is the fact that I can say I exercise privilege vis-a-vis black people. Obama understands that. So America is held together by the fact that the poor white man understands that he still exercises a privilege that the rich black man does not.
And that's what Donald Trump is reminding them. Donald Trump's reminding all
the
white
people. Oh, Donald
Trump
changed the game. And let me tell you why. The United States power structure underestimated the impact of an unapologetically honest fool over the American electorate. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, Trump is saying to white folks what white folks feel.
Poor white folks, too.
Yes, poor white folks. So you got a rich, wealthy white man appealing to poor white folks. You've never had that. But it's working because he is unapologetic. He's ignorant. He's a fool. But he's honest.
Mm-hmm.
And white folk can respect and identify with a white male who's willing to be honest. In other words, Donald Trump intentionally made sure he was the polar opposite of Barack Obama. Look at Obama. You ask Obama a question, you don't get an answer. You never get a straight answer from Obama. It's always, well, we got to see. Let's see what the Americans think. Now, go back to George Bush. George Bush told you what he felt. He was another idiot, but he was honest.
Mm-hmm.
Trump is honest. The reason white folks are not rallying behind Hillary the way that the power structure wants them to is because Hillary is the same old thing. She's Clinton all over again. She's Obama all over again. She's a Bilderberg. She's politically correct. Her whole message is scripted. Trump's is not. So the issue now is how do we engineer an election where Hillary wins? Because right now, Trump is carrying the momentum. See, remember now, people don't choose the president anyway. But you want the people to choose the person you wanted. So the illusion of democracy continues to prevail. America is not a democracy. America is a republic. That's why when people pledge the flag, and I hope there's no black boys pledging the flag, but when people pledge the flag, they pledge the flag to the republic. The word democracy is not in the pledge. The word democracy is not in the preamble. The word democracy is not in the Constitution. The word democracy is not in any of the 50 state constitutions. So why is America called a democracy when it's really a republic? Because it is the illusion of inclusion, the belief that the people actually control its leaders when it does not.
So with that said, right, for as much as we know that America has a history of racism, institutionalized racism, systemic racism, why did Barack Obama become president? Why did
Barack,
they allow Barack
excellent
become
question.
President?
Okay, every president that is elected is given a domestic mandate and an international mandate. There's something they need you to do domestically. There's something they need you to do internationally.
Mm-hmm.
But President Obama, his international mandate was to reopen Africa's resources to Western exploitation.
Right.
George Bush destroyed the economic conversation between America and Africa. And as you know, Africa is the richest continent on the face of the earth. No country can survive without it. If you have a cell phone, laptop, television, a car, airplane, it requires a substance, a material called coltan. The Congo is the number one producer of coltan on the globe. No Congo, no cell phone. So America needs Africa. Bush destroyed the relationship, though, with the African Union. With Obama's father being Kenyan and his mother being white, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
He was the perfect person to put in the White House to reopen up that relationship with Africa, which he has done, okay? And through AFRICOM, which is African Command, President Obama has successfully recolonized Africa in the name of Western financial interest at a rate we haven't seen since Africa was under colonialism. So he succeeded internationally.
Mm-hmm.
That was the international mandate. Get the money back from Africa, the gold, the diamonds, the oil, the coltan, get it back. He got it.
Some people would say that Barack did.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It is 7:18 p.m. straight up Chicago time, Chicago Central Standard Time. It is still wonderful outside. It is humid. It has begun to get humid, but it's still a beautiful day. It's a beautiful time. And remember what I've said earlier into the show. If it's hot, if it's extreme and deadly heat where you are, keep yourself safe, keep yourself hydrated, keep yourself out of the sun, try not to overdo it outside, do what you have to do out there, and then get back into where there is some air conditioning, because your life is precious, and that's what this show is all about, making the world a better place. As we've been talking about, folks, the Democratic, and I believe in Philadelphia, is underway. It is underway. And I'll have more to report on that probably tomorrow, more likely tomorrow, because I'm going to try and find out bits and pieces of it, the most important parts of it, the speaker who said the most controversial thing, the the speaker who was mostly booed off the stage, and that kind of thing. And like I just got through saying, I think they should focus on violence. It's got to be the one of the number one issues that should be brought up in this convention. Republicans, I mean, they don't have any issues. They don't have a platform. They don't have a policy. They don't have anything to talk about but, you know, trying to scare us to death. You know, be scared. Vote for Trump. I'm gonna protect you, you know. And it's always hurry up and be afraid with the Republicans. And contrast that with the Democrats, it's always, you know, they're always policy issued. And the Republicans look at that as being crazy. You know, I look at the Republicans as being crazy. All right, let this sink in, folks. Hillary just put Debbie Wasserman Schultz on her campaign last night. Last night she put Debbie Wasserman Schultz onto her campaign. That's a brilliant move. Just threw away a majority of Bernie Sanders voters. What do you think? 347-857-1762. That's what some people think. You know, that's what some people think. Some people think because getting rid of Debbie Wasserman Schultz and then adding her to her campaign staff, you know, regardless of the position, I think it's a slap on the supporters. There's no doubt about that. You know, good luck winning the election. Without them, without Bernie Sanders' supporters, Trump is basically a shoo-in to be president of the United States. She needs Bernie Sanders supporters. Can she get that tonight during this convention? Can she get that? She has her and her people. They have the entire night, the entire week to try to persuade Bernie Sanders supporters who are not supporting Hillary, who will not support her, regardless of what Bernie Sanders say to his, you know, they're pissed off at this email controversy. They think that Hillary and Debbie Wasserman Schultz are in cahoots some sort of way. And I do too. Hillary, she's not blameless in this. And just months ago, we were talking about the trust factor in Hillary. Can she be trusted? And as of now, it's been proven that Hillary Rodham Clinton, I didn't say rotten, I said Rodham, Hillary Rodham Clinton, she cannot be trusted. I think this is going to come out. I think, and I actually do think because of this Democratic email scandal that Trump is going to win the election. I think the Democrats have actually handed this election over to Trump. With this email controversy. I mean, this is the second email controversy involving Hillary Clinton. The second one. And you think the Republicans are not going to pounce on this and hit Hillary over the head with this? Of course they are. You can't be that crazy not to think that. Hillary knows it. Her campaign knows it. Debbie Wasserman Schultz have been plotting for months and months to derail Bernie Sanders, to make him look bad, to make him look stupid. She even called him or one of his campaign staffers damn liars. And I'm glad she's gone. She has an attitude. She has an attitude. She has a big time attitude. You know, I'm pretty sure I would not want to work for her. I'm pretty sure there's a lot of staff below her that probably don't like her, don't want working for her. She's an awful person. She's gone, and she deserves to be gone. And if she wants Clinton to win this election, she'll be far gone. Because as long as people think that Debbie Wasserman Schultz is a part of Hillary Clinton's campaign, that's a vote that Hillary Clinton will not get. Because Bernie Sanders supporters feel, if not outrightly know, that Debbie Wasserman Schultz sabotaged Bernie's campaign for Hillary. And regardless of what Bernie is saying, support Hillary, they, his supporters say, hell no, we are not going to support Hillary. We want you, Bernie. And Bernie is saying, no, support Hillary. We get support Hillary because we have to beat Trump. It's a soap opera, folks. I'm going to get the popcorn. if it's not the RNC, it's the DNC. You know what I'm saying? It's one or the other. And it is a show, folks, on both sides of the aisle. It is a show. And you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We got about 5 minutes left in the show or a little less. Let's see if we can bring it up. We got about 5 minutes left. Four minutes? Okay. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, for joining me on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Make sure you tune in tomorrow. I will be right back starting at 6 p.m. Chicago time. Thanks a lot, everybody. Goodbye.